East Lynne by Mrs. Henry Wood. Adapted for radio in seven parts by Michael Bakewell. With Rosemary Leach as Mrs. Henry Wood, Moya Leslie as the Lady Isabel, David Collins as Mr. Carlyle, Anthony Edridge as Francis Levison, Maxine Audley as Miss Cornelia, and Julie Barry as Barbara Hare. The lawyer, Carlyle, has not only managed to buy the grand estate of East Lynne, but to become engaged to the fair Lady Isabel, the daughter of its late owner. East Lynne, Part 3, A Chance Encounter in Boulogne.
The county carriages began to arrive at East Lynne to pay the wedding visit to Mr. and Lady Isabel Carlyle. Some appeared with all the pomp of coronets and hammercloths, and bedizened footmen with calves and wigs and gold-headed canes. Some came with four horses, and some without riders. Amongst the rest went Justice and Mrs. Hare and Barbara. Lady Isabel was meanwhile being dressed by Joyce, whom she had grown to like very much.
Which dress, my lady?
It'd better be the black lace, I think.
Yes, my lady. Oh, I spoke to Miss Carlyle, my lady. She's willing that I should be transferred to you.
That is most kind of her.
She says I ought first of all to acquaint you with certain unpleasant facts in my history. And the same thought had occurred to me.
What facts?
My lady, I'll tell you as shortly as I can. I've a half-sister, Affie.
Is that really her name, Affie?
Well, she was christened by a very fine name, my lady, Aphrodite. But I and my father never called her anything but Affie. She was the child of my father's second marriage. Oh, shall I take that, my lady?
Oh, thank you.
Affie quite frightened us. Her notions were fine, and her dress was fine. She was gay and giddy and very pretty. Do nothing all day except read books. She used to get out of the Wesleyan Library. My father didn't like it. We were only plain working people. And she wanted to set up for a lady. The next thing, she got acquainted with young Richard Hare.
Richard Hare?
Mr. Justice Hare's only son. Own brother to Miss Barbara. Oh, Affie was very flighty. She encouraged Mr. Richard, and he soon grew to love her with a wild sort of love. He was rather simple. Affie used to laugh at him behind his back. She encouraged others, too, and would have them there in the evening when my father was away.
Had she many admirers?
Well, the chief one, my lady, was Richard Hare. She got acquainted with somebody else, a stranger, who used to ride over from a distance to see her. But I fancy there was nothing in it. Mr. Richard was the one. And it went on and on and on till he killed Father.
Oh, very dreadful.
There'd been a lot of offensive gossip in West Lynne about Affie and Mr. Richard. My father had got to hear of it. Well, he told Affie before me that it should not go on any longer. Lady, next night, Richard Hare shot my father.
Oh, Joyce, I...
Whether it was done on purpose or whether the gun went off in a scuffle, I can't tell. People think it was willful murder.
Joyce, I do not like to hear this. What was done to Richard Hare?
Well, he escaped, my lady. He went off the same night. He's never been heard of since.
And what happened to your half-sister?
That is the worst, I have to tell, my lady. The worst as regards her. As soon as the inquest was over, she went off with Richard Hare. Nothing has been heard of either of them.
Oh,
hardly likely, but what they went out of England, perhaps to Australia. What with the shame and shock of my poor father's murder, I had a long attack of illness.
Oh, Joyce.
Miss Carlyle had me at her house. She and her servants nursed me through it. Oh, she's good at heart, me lady. Only her manners are against her. And she will think herself better than other people. Oh, excuse me, lady.
What is it, Susan?
Is me lady there?
Yes.
Some visitors. Peter told me to come and tell you. It's the heirs. And she's with them. I watched her get out the carriage.
Who?
Why? Miss Barbara. Only fancy her coming to pay the wedding visit here. My lady better take care she don't get a bowl of poison mixed for her.
some visitors in the drawing room, milady. Mr. Justice Hare and Mrs. Hare and Miss Barbara.
Is Mr. Carlyle at home?
Yes, milady.
Then let us finish dressing. How long is it since this happened, Joyce?
Well, it'll be 4 years next September, milady. Well, it was this that I had to tell you, milady, before you decided to take me into your service. It's not every lady who would like to engage one whose sister had turned out so badly.
I cannot see that it makes any difference. Joyce, what was it that I heard you and Susan gossiping about at the door? About Miss Hare giving me a dish of poison. You should tell Susan not to whisper so loudly.
Oh, well, it was only a bit of nonsense, of course, milady. The fact is that people think that Miss Barbara was much attached to Mr. Carlyle, regularly in love with him. Many thought it would be a match. But I don't fancy she'd have been the one to make him happy, with all her love.
The Hares paid rather a long visit. Isabel quite fell in love with the gentle, suffering Mrs. Hare, who had risen to leave when Miss Carlyle entered. Miss Carlyle wished them to remain longer, had some things, she said, to show Barbara. Justice and Mrs. Hare declined. They had guests to dinner, but Barbara might stay if she liked, which she did eagerly.
How do you like Lady Isabel, Cornelia?
Better than I thought I should. I had expected airs and graces and pretence, and I must say she is free from them. She seems quite wrapped up in Archibald, and watches for his coming home as a cat watches for a mouse. She is dull without him.
Dull? How does she employ her time?
In doing nothing. She sings a bit, and plays a bit, and reads a bit, and receives her visitors, and idles away her days. She coaxes Archibald out here into the gardens after breakfast, and he ought not to let himself be coaxed. It makes him late at his office. And then she dances down to the park gates with him, hindering him still further, for he would go alone in half the time. One morning, it poured with rain. She actually went all the same. I told her she would spoil her dress. Oh, that was nothing, she said. And Archibald wrapped a shawl around her and took her. Of course, to spoil dresses is nothing to her. And then in the evening, she goes down to meet him again.
Well, I suppose it is natural.
I suppose it is absurd. They go strolling out together, or she sings to him, he hanging over her as if she were gold. To judge by appearances, she's more precious to him than any gold that ever was coined into money.
It's turning cold. I'm going back to the house.
Yes, yes, you do. You'll find them somewhere together. I must go and talk to the gardener. Some foolish idea of her ladyship's about an oval geranium bed. I'll soon put a stop to that.
Barbara returned through the gathering dusk. The sound of Lady Isabel's singing echoed through the house, and she followed where it led. As she stood by the open door of the drawing room, she could distinguish Isabel seated at the piano, and Mr. Carlyle standing behind her.
I don't know. I never liked the song so much until I heard it from you.
I must have sung you 10 songs at least this evening, Archibald. You ought to pay me for them.
And I will. You've 1,000 such kisses.
I wonder if they've come back. Shall we go to the next room?
No, if we must.
Miss Hare, are you all on your own in here? I really beg your pardon. I suppose you were with Miss Carlyle.
I came to look for our carriage. I suddenly realized how late it is. It should have been here long ago.
There's no carriage outside, certainly.
Then I fear I must trouble your coachman. Mama may have gone to rest, tired, and Papa may have forgotten me. It would never do for me to be locked out.
As you were one night before.
Oh, don't, Archibald. Don't recall it. Can Peter take me?
I'd better take you. It is late. I won't be long, my darling.
There are moments in a woman's life when she is betrayed into forgetting the ordinary rules of conduct and propriety, when she is betrayed into making a scene. Barbara Hare's love, her jealousy, the never-dying pain always preying on her heartstrings since the marriage took place, her keen sense of the humiliation which had come home to her, were all rising fiercely, bubbling up with fiery heat. A little self-control, and Barbara would not have uttered the words that must remain on her mind hereafter as an incubus, dyeing her cheeks red when she recalled them.
When does the justice begin haymaking, Barbara? Barbara? I asked you which day your father cuts his hay. Barbara, are you well? What is it? Barbara, what is it? What's the matter? Come, sit here on the stile. There. Are you feeling better? What kind of caused all this?
What kind of caused it? You can ask me that.
I don't understand you, Barbara. If I have offended you, I'm truly sorry.
Truly sorry? What do you care for me? If I go under the sod tomorrow, you have your wife to care for. What am I?
Hush! Someone may hear you.
What is my misery to you? I would rather be in my grave, Archibald Carlyle, than endure the life I lead.
I cannot affect to misunderstand you, but... My dear Barbara, I never gave you cause to think that I cared for you more than I did care.
Never gave me cause? When you came to our house constantly, when you gave this locket, when you have been more intimate with me than a brother.
And stay, Barbara, there it is, a brother. I have been nothing else. It never occurred to me to be anything else.
As a brother, nothing else.
Yes.
What cared you for my feelings? What wrecked you that you gained my love?
Barbara, hush. Do be calm and reasonable. If I ever gave you cause to think I regarded you with deeper feeling, I can only express to you my deep regret. And I assure you it was done unconsciously.
I could bear it better, but that it was known. All West Lynne had coupled us together in their prying gossip and have nothing but pity to cast to me now.
I can only express to you my deep regret. And I can only hope that you will soon forget it all. Let the remembrance of this conversation pass away with tonight. Let's still be to each other as friends, as brother and sister. Now, believe me, the confession has not lessened you in my estimation.
Miss Barbara? Miss Barbara? Is that you?
Wilson, what are you doing here?
The justice sent the carriage to fetch you, but Mrs. Hare sent me out in case you should have come on foot. Mm.
Thank you, Wilson. I will follow you.
Thank you, Miss Barbara.
Good night, Archibald. I must have been mad. I must have been mad to say what I did. Forget that it was utterly.
I told you I would do so.
You will not betray me to your wife.
Oh, Barbara.
Thank you. Good night. Good night, Barbara.
God bless you.
Mr. Carlyle walked home in a fit of musing. The revelation had given him pain, and possibly a little flattery, for he was fond of pretty Barbara. Fond in his way, not hers. Not with the sort of fondness he felt for his wife.
Archibald?
Isabel? Is that you, dearest?
I came out to meet you. Have you not been very long?
I think I have. We met one of the servants at the second stile, but I went all the way.
You are well acquainted with theirs?
Oh, yes, indeed. Well, Cornelia is related to them.
Do you think Barbara pretty?
Yes, very.
Then, well acquainted as you are, I wonder you never fell in love with her. Did you, Archibald?
Did I what, Isabel?
You never loved Barbara Hare?
Loved her?
What is your head running on, Isabel? I never loved but one woman. That one I made my wife.
Another year came in. Isabel would have been altogether happy but for Miss Carlyle. That lady still inflicted her presence upon East Lynne and was the bane of the household. She deferred outwardly to Lady Isabel as mistress, but the real mistress was herself. Poor, inexperienced Isabel was unfit to battle with Miss Carlyle and with the miseries and pains which the world imposes on us.
How is she doing? Is there any danger?
Mum, I don't know. I trust not. But it's hard to witness. It must be awful to bear.
Childbirth is our common curse, Joyce. You and I may congratulate ourselves that we have not chosen to encounter it.
Joyce, I trust there is no danger. I should not like her to die.
Was she fearing that if her poor young sister-in-law did die, a weight would rest upon her conscience for all time? A heavy, ever-present weight, whispering that she might have rendered her short year of marriage more happy had she chosen, and that she had not so chosen, but had deliberately steeled every crevice of her heart against her?
If there is danger, Joyce,
why do you think there's danger, Mum? Are other people not as ill as this?
It is to be hoped they are not.
Well, Wainwright, what does Dr. Martin say?
He cannot say any more than I did. The symptoms are critical, but he hopes she will do well. There's nothing for it but patience. However, I do think you would be advised to send for Little.
For the rector?
Not for your wife. I spoke for the child. Should it not live, it may be satisfactory to you and Lady Isabel to know that it was their time.
Oh. Well, yes, I thank you. Yes, Little shall be sent for.
By what name is the child to be baptized?
William. Yes, William.
Mr. Carlyle.
It's a little girl, sir. Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm sure I thought I'd said so, but I'm flurried as I never was before.
Yes, you may well have told me, Joyce. All my thoughts are with Lady Isabel.
Name the child.
Isabel Lucy.
No. I name this child Isabel Lucy Carlyle.
I fear I bore it badly, Archibald.
No.
But let us be thankful it is over. How thankful none can know, save those who have gone through it.
Oh, I think they can. I never knew what thankfulness was until this day.
That the baby is safe.
That you are safe, my darling. Safe and spared to me, Isabel. I never until today knew what prayer was. The prayer of a heart in its sore need.
Why did you give the baby my name?
Do you think I could have given it a prettier one? I don't.
The baby lived, and appeared likely to live. And of course the next thing was to look for a maid for it.
All the servants in the neighbourhood, who do you suppose has come up after the place of nurse?
I can't imagine.
Why, Wilson, Mrs. Hare's maid. 3 years and 5 months she's been with them, and now leaves as a consequence of a quarrel with Barbara.
Is she likely to suit? Is she a good servant?
Oh, she's not a bad servant as servants go. She's steady and respectable, but she has a tongue as long as from here to Lynneborough.
That won't hurt, baby. If you think she is the right person, then I will engage her.
You feel better, my darling?
Oh, yes, I feel better.
I shall only be away for a couple of hours. Do you want me to close the door into the next room?
Oh, no. No, leave it open. It comforts me to know that Joyce and Wilson are looking after the baby.
Oh. Goodbye, my darling.
Goodbye.
Oh, Wilson. Yes. I think maybe Isabel will soon be asleep, but would you go in and sit with her?
Yes, sir.
I don't want to listen to you. When they reached our gate, there was quite a Mrs. Upstein. Were you a third in it?
Yes. Oh, without meaning to be. She wanted him to go into the house, but he would not. So they stood there. The moon was rising, and it was nearly as bright as day. Something was said about the locket, and about his giving her a piece of his hair to put in it. I could not catch the words distinctly, and I did not dare to stir nearer for fear of them hearing me. But it was a regular love scene. I could hear enough for that. If anyone thought to be Mrs. Carlyle, Barbara Hare did that night.
How very stupid she must have been to go on caring for one who did not care for her.
I tell you, George, you don't know that he did not care. And I'm not sure even now that he does not. You remember the day when they all came here on the wedding visit and Miss Barbara remained here all day?
I remember.
I was sent out to attend her home in the evening. And at the last star but one, what do you think I came upon?
A snake, perhaps.
I came upon Miss Barbara and Mr. Carlyle. She was leaning against the stile, crying, sobs breaking from her, like one might expect to hear from a breaking heart. It seemed as if she'd been reproaching him. I heard him say something about being only a brother and sister from henceforth. I spoke for fear they should see me and then went back. When I last looked at them, they were holding hands. Oh, how ill she looked. As if she'd never get over it.
If you had seen her a week ago, you would not say she was looking ill now, speaking by comparison.
My goodness. Would not somebody's hopes be up again if anything should happen?
Wilson, do you think you're saying
nothing but the truth? Men are shamefully fickle. Husbands are worse than sweethearts. But if anything happens to my lady, Miss Barbara, as sure as fate, would step into her shoes.
Nothing is going to happen to her.
Oh, I hope it is not now or later. She would not make a very kind stepmother.
If you think to pursue these sorts of topics at East Lynne, Wilson, I shall inform my lady that you are unsuited to the situation.
I dare say.
And you know that when I make up my mind to do a thing, I do it.
Oh, you were always one of the straight-laced sort, Joyce. But now I've had me say out, I shall stop. And you need not fear that I should be such a fool as to go prattling this kind of thing to the servants.
Now just fancy this conversation penetrating to Lady Isabel. She heard it. Every word. It is all very well to oppose the argument, who attends to the gossip of servants? Let me tell you, it depends upon what the subject may be, whether the gossip is attended to or not. A pretty state of excitement she worked herself into as she lay there in a state of partial delirium. She dropped the idea that Archibald Carlyle had never loved her, that his heart had been given to Barbara Hare. It was near the dinner hour when Mr. Carlyle entered.
Isabel, your words.
Archibald, don't marry her, don't marry her. I could not rest in my grave.
What is it, dearest? You're feverish.
She would ill treat my charity. She would draw her love from it and from my memory. Oh, Archibald, you must not marry her.
There is no possibility of my marrying anyone, Isabel. You are my wife.
If I die, I may, and anything I shall. Do not let her use her, my
dear. Of course I shall not. But of whom are you speaking?
How do you need to ask it? Did you love no one before you married me? Or perhaps you love her still, perhaps you love her still.
Of whom do you speak, Isabel?
Barbara
Hare. Isabel. What notion can you possibly have picked up about myself and Barbara Hare I am unable to conceive? I never loved Barbara Hare.
She loved you. No.
If it was so, Isabel, she was more reprehensibly foolish than I could have given Barbara's good sense credit for.
Oh, don't be angry with me, Archibald.
No, no.
The trouble and doubt would not have arisen had I cared for you.
Now tell me, what put this into your brain?
Oh, I don't know. A dream, perhaps. I think that I'm a little delirious at times and I don't know what is real and what is
false. Yeah, well, don't have any more of these dreams if you can help it. and regard them for what they are, illusions. I'm bound to you by fond ties, Isabel, as well as legal ones. It's out of Barbara Hare's power to step in between us.
Hmm? Miss Barbara Hare's called to see you, sir.
Miss Hare? Yes, show her in.
I am very sorry to disturb you, Mr. Carlyle.
Come and take a seat, Barbara.
I asked for Miss Carlyle. But, in fact, it was you I wished to see. And in any case, she is not here.
What is it, Barbara?
You remember Lieutenant Thorne, the man who Richard was so certain was the real murderer of Hallijohn.
The man no one knew of?
I think he is at West Lynn.
What?
It can be no other. Mama and I were shopping today, and I saw a stranger coming up the street. A tall, good-looking, dark-haired man with a conspicuous gold chain and studs. The sun was full upon him, causing the ornaments to shine, especially the diamond ring he wore, for he had one hand raised to his face. The thought flashed over me. That is like the description Richard gave of the man Thorne. Just then, I heard him spoken to by someone on the other side of the street. It was Otway Bethel, and he called him Captain Thorne. What can be done?
It's hard to say what is to be done, Barbara. The description you give of this man certainly tallies with that given by Richard. Did he look like a gentleman?
Very much so. A remarkably aristocratic-looking man, as it struck me.
Of course, Barbara, the first thing must be to try to ascertain whether it is the same man.
Yes.
If we find that it is, then we must deliberate upon future measures. I'll see you to the road.
They strolled across the park together, deep in discussion, quite unconscious that Lady Isabel's jealous eyes were watching them from her dressing-room window. He went as far as the park gates with Barbara, shook hands, and wished her good night. But by the following evening, he had reason to visit the Hares and spoke to Barbara once more.
Barbara, you'll scarcely credit this, but hardly had I parted from you yesterday evening than who should come by but your Captain Thorne.
You saw him?
And spoke with him. He was with Tom Herbert. They came into the house to take a glass of cider.
And what did you make of him?
He aroused my suspicion, certainly, at first. But to begin with, he denied acquaintance with the neighbourhood, and then let fall that he knew of a good place for eel fishing called the Low Pond. I mean, it may have been nothing.
But were you able to confirm that it was the same Thorne?
No, I was not. Oh. I contrived to let Joyce Hallijohn have a glimpse of him.
Yes.
She had seen Thorne only once when he was at her father's cottage, but she didn't recognise Captain Thorne as the same man.
No. And did you speak to him with Otway Bethel?
Oh, that man's a brute. He denies all knowledge of Thorne.
My mother was always convinced that Bethel was the murderer. I am certain that he was implicated in some way, and certain that he knew Thorne. But where is this Captain Thorne now?
He's gone.
Gone?
It seems he only came down to go fishing with Tom Herbert's brother, and since he is away in Ireland, there was no reason for him to stay.
Who or what is this Captain Thorne?
He's an officer in Her Majesty's service, in John Herbert's regiment. Tom said he was of good family, but I cannot help suspecting that it is the same man.
Can nothing more be done?
Nothing. In the present state of the affair, we can only wait on again with what patience we may.
Oh, aye, to wait on in dreary pain. To wait on perhaps for years, perhaps forever.
No.
And poor Richard, wearing out his days in poverty and exile.
A few years had passed. There were three children now at East Lynn: Isabel, William, and Archibald. Lady Isabel had been attacked by illness. She recovered from the disorder, but it had left her in an alarming state of prostration.
Mr. Carlyle,
I should recommend a complete change of scene. Some place on the French or Belgian coast. Sea bathing might do wonders.
Dr. Wainwright, do you think it well for her to go so far from home?
Oh, in these cases of protracted weakness, where you can do nothing but try to coax the strength back again, change of air and scene are of immense benefit. Boulogne-sur-Mer would be an excellent place.
Boulogne-sur-Mer, of all places in the world. Said to be crowded and vulgar.
And there is the added advantage that the Ducies are staying there.
Oh. The Ducies?
The Honourable Augustus Ducie has suffered a series of financial reverses. He and Mrs. Ducie decided that life would be less expensive for them on the continent. They will provide company for Lady Isabel.
I have no wish to go to the continent. I wish to remain at East Lynne.
In Lady Isabel's illness, the old trouble had returned, the sore feeling touching her husband and Barbara Hare. Mr. Carlyle's demonstrative affection, shown so greatly for her in the first 12 months or so of their married life, had subsided into calmness. It was not that his love had faded, but that time and custom had wrought their natural effect. Isabel did not understand this change in her husband's manner. She attributed it to the influence Barbara held in his memory. And yet, despite her jealousy, she yielded over the journey to Boulogne.
Mama! William, Isabel, would you like to go a great way with Mama? Over the sea in a boat?
To sea? Over the sea, Mama? That would be wonderful.
In a boat? Can Archie come too, Mama?
Oh, Archie and all. And Joyce and Wilson.
The children are not going to the seaside.
Oh.
They are not ordered there.
Archie, let them be caught.
Now, stop that and go to your room.
But they must go with me. Of course they are not expressly ordered to it. But why should they not go?
Why should they not? Why? On account of the expense, to be sure. I can tell you, Lady Isabel, what with one expense and another, your husband will soon be on the road to ruin. Your journey with Joyce and Peter will cost enough, ma'am, without taking a van load of nurses and children.
Surely it is not too...
Besides, your object in going is to recover health. And how can you do that if you are worried with the children?
But I could not leave the children behind. I should grow no better if you sent me there alone. I should ever be yearning for my children.
Alone, Lady Isabel? Is your husband nothing?
But he will only take me. He will not remain.
Well, you can't expect his business to go to rack and ruin. How can you stay away from it? What with all these heavy expenses upon him, there's more need than ever for his sticking to it closely. And before the children are gallivanted over the water, it might be as well to sit down and calculate the cost. Oh, of course, Lady Isabel, I only offer my opinion. You are Archibald's wife and sole mistress, and will do what you please.
Do as she pleased. Poor Lady Isabel bowed her head meekly, effectually silenced, and her heart breaking with pain.
Joyce, I have decided I shall leave you at home. I must take Wilson instead.
Leave me here? Oh, my lady, what have I done?
You have done all that you ought, Joyce, but you must stay with the children. If I may not take them, the next best thing will be to leave them with you. I shall give them into your charge, not into Miss Carlyle's. If Wilson remained, I could not do that.
Lady, you must do whatever you think best.
I am sent away to recover health and strength, but it may be I shall die, Joyce, if I never return. Will you promise to remain with my children?
My lady, I hope you'll come back to us as well as you used to be. I trust you will hope so too, my lady, and not give way to low spirits.
I sincerely hope and trust I shall. Still, there is no knowing, for I am very ill. Joyce, give me your promise in case of the worst, that you will remain with the children.
Oh, I will, my lady, as long as I'm permitted.
And be kind to them and love them and shield them from any unkindness that may be put upon them. And talk to them sometimes of their poor mother who is gone.
I will, ma'am. Oh, I will.
Oh. Must you go back today?
My dear Isabel, I've not a second to lose. The boat sails at 9. I've already stayed here 2 days longer than I'd intended.
I will be so lonely without you.
You have Peter and Wilson to look after you.
This is not what I meant, Archibald.
If only the deuces had not taken it into their heads to go off to Baden-Baden without a word of warning.
I shall make no acquaintance here in Boulogne.
It would not be wise to do so indiscriminately. But you may chance to find someone, you know. All sorts of people come over here, some respectable, and others quite the contrary. So you must be very careful who you take up with.
I will, Archibald.
Goodbye, then, Isabel. Take care of yourself.
Give my love to my darlings. Kiss them for me. And Archibald?
Yes? What is it? I'm not a second to lose, I told you. The boat sails at 9.
Do not keep making love to Barbara Hare while I'm away.
There's no chance of that, Isabel. And now I must be off.
Lady Isabel wondered listlessly how she could pass the rest of the day. Indeed, how she should pass away the next few weeks. What should she do with her time? She ventured onto the pier where they had been the previous evening and sat and watched the people strolling by.
I certainly cannot be mistaken. Have I not the honor of once more meeting Lady Isabel Vane? I beg your pardon. I should have said Lady Isabel Carlyle. In the pleasure of seeing you again so unexpectedly, I thought of you as you were then. May I sit beside you?
Of course.
Oh, what can have brought you to this place?
I have been ill and am ordered to the seaside. We should not have come here, but Mrs. Ducey. We expected to meet her. Mr. Carlyle only left me this morning.
Mrs. Ducey is off to Baden-Baden. I see them occasionally. They were fixtures in Paris for some time. You do indeed look ill. Alarmingly ill. Is there anything I can do for you?
Perhaps I have ventured out too early. I think I will return. I shall meet my servant, no doubt. Good morning, Captain.
But indeed, you do not appear fit enough to walk alone. You must allow me to see you safely home. Take my arm, Lady Isabel. Have you seen Lady Mount Severn lately?
I saw her when I was in London this spring with Mr. Carlyle. The first time we have met since my marriage, we do not correspond. Lord Mount Severn has paid us some visits at East Lynne. They are in town yet, I believe.
For all I know. I have not seen them or England either for 10 months. I have been staying in Paris and got here yesterday.
A long leave of absence?
Oh, I have left the army. I sold out. The truth is, Lady Isabel, for I don't mind telling you, things are rather down with me at present. My old uncle has behaved shamefully. He has married again.
Yes, I heard that Sir Peter had married.
He's 73, the old simpleton. Of course, this materially alters my prospects. For it is just possible he may have a son of his own now. And my credit has all come down on me. They allowed me to run into debt with complacency when I was heir to the title and estate. But as soon as Sir Peter's marriage appeared in the papers, myself and my consequences dropped 100%. Credit was stopped and I was done for payment. So I sold out and came abroad.
Leaving your creditors behind you?
What else could I do? My uncle would not pay them or increase my allowance.
What are your prospects, then?
Prospects? Do you see that little ragged boy throwing stones into the harbor? Ask him what his prospects are, and he would stare you in the face and say, none. Mine are on a par with his.
You may succeed, Sir Peter, yet.
I may. But I may not. When these old idiots marry a young wife. Am I walking too fast for you?
Well, you increased your pace alarmingly when you spoke of Sir Peter's marriage. And I'm not sorry for it means I must be growing a little stronger. A week ago, I could not have walked so fast. But we're at my lodgings. I must go in.
And what do you propose to do with yourself this afternoon?
To lie down. I am not strong enough to sit up all day.
Now, should you be going out again afterwards, you must allow me to take care of you. I am glad that I happen to be here, for I am sure you ought not to wander out only followed by a servant. You need a strong arm to lean on. When Mr. Carlyle returns, he will thank me for my pains.
What was she to urge an objection? Simply nothing. As the days passed on, Lady Isabel improved wonderfully, but she made no acquaintance whatever in the place, and when she had a companion, it was Captain Leveson. You may say that she should have remained indoors and not have subjected herself to his company, but remaining indoors would not have brought her health, and it was health she was staying in Boulogne to acquire.
Isabel! What can you have been doing to yourself, my darling? You look almost well.
Yes, I am much better, Archibald. We've been waiting here some time. How long the boat was coming in.
The wind was dead against us.
You remember Captain Leveson?
Yes.
I wrote you word he was here.
And I am pleased that it happened to be so, for it has enabled me to attend Lady Isabel in some of her walks. She is stronger now, but at first she was unfit to venture out alone.
I'm sure she's been obliged for your attentions. That's a visible improvement. It seems a little short of a miracle. I feel much indebted to you, Captain. You must come and dine with us on Sunday.
I am grateful for the chance of a quiet talk with you, Carlyle. This compulsory exile abroad is becoming intolerable. Do you see any chance of my getting back to England?
Oh, not in the least. Unless you can manage to satisfy or partially satisfy these claims you've been telling me of. Will not the Peter assist you?
He ought to meet me. I am his heir, so long as Lady Leveson does not give him one. I do not hear that she has expectations.
You should contrive to see him.
I know I should. But it is not possible under present circumstances. With these thunderclouds hanging over me, I dare not set foot in England and run the risk of being dropped upon.
Yes.
I can stand a few things, but I shudder at the bare idea of a prison.
Someone might see him for you.
Someone? Who? I have quarreled with my lawyers.
Ah.
They have used me shamefully since my uncle's marriage.
Look, shall I see Sir Peter for you?
Will you?
Well, if you like. As your friend, you understand, not as your solicitor. I have a slight knowledge of Sir Peter. If I can render you any little service, I shall be happy to do so, in return for your attention to my wife. I cannot promise to see him for these 2 or 3 weeks, for we're terribly busy. And otherwise, I should be staying here with my wife.
Whilst they continued to converse, Lady Isabel was sitting in the adjoining room, aware that a sensation all too warm, a feeling of attraction towards Francis Leveson, was working within her. And mixed with it was the stern voice of conscience, overwhelming her with a most lively terror. But do not mistake the word terror. What she feared was that further companionship, especially lonely companionship with Francis Leveson, might increase the sentiment she entertained for him.
Archibald,
mm-hmm.
I have a favour to ask you. You must promise to grant it me.
What is it?
No, that is not promising.
I will grant it, Isabel, if it be in my power.
I want you to remain with me for the rest of the time that I must stay here.
My dear, how could you think of wishing anything so unlikely? It's circuit time.
Oh, Archibald, you must remain.
Well, I wish I could, but it's impossible. Now, you must know it to be so.
And you go back tomorrow?
Necessity has no law, my darling.
Then take me with you.
No, Isabel.
Oh.
Not while I find the change is doing you so much good. I took these rooms for 6 weeks. Now, you must remain certainly until the end of the term.
Oh, I cannot stay without you, Archibald.
Well, tell me why.
Oh, I am so dull without you.
Now, that is no reason. Captain Leveson will look after you. He'll charm you out of your dullness.
Do you remember the evening, Lady Isabel? just such a one as this that we all passed at Richmond.
Yes, I remember it. We had all spent a pleasant day. You drove Mrs. Vane home and I went with Papa. You drove recklessly, I remember. And Mrs. Vane said when we reached home that you should never drive her again.
I drove recklessly on purpose to frighten her and pay her off.
Well, what had she done to you?
Put me into a rage. She had saddled herself on me when I wished for another to be my companion.
Blanche Challoner.
Blanche Challoner? What did I care for Blanche Challoner?
Mrs. Vane used to accuse you of caring too much for her.
She accused me of caring for someone else more than Blanche Challoner. And for once she was right. No, Lady Isabel, it was not Blanche Challoner that I wished to drive home. Could you not have a better guess than that at the time? The past is gone and cannot be recalled, but we have played our cards like simpletons. If ever two beings were formed to love one another, you and I were. I sometimes thought you read my feelings.
Listen, I beg you.
I must speak, Lady Isabel. A few words, then I am silent forever. I would have declared myself had I dared, but my uncertain position, my debts, my inability to keep a wife weighed me down. I crushed my hopes within me and suffered you to escape.
I will not hear this, Captain Everson.
Isabel, I love you passionately still.
How dare you so presume to address me?
What I have said can do no harm now. The time has gone by for it. For neither you nor I are likely to forget that you are a wife. The gulf between us is impossible, but the fault was mine. I ought to have avowed my affection and not have suffered you to throw yourself away on Mr. Carlyle.
Throw myself away? Mr. Carlyle is my dear husband. Esteemed, respected, beloved. Look at his noble nature, his noble form. What are you by his side? Forget yourself, Captain Levison.
No, I do not.
Don't insult me or take advantage of my momentary unprotected condition. Would you dare to do it if Mr. Carlyle were in reach? Wish you good evening, sir.
No, I pray you forgive and forget what has escaped me, Lady Isabel. Suffer me to be as before, the kind friend, the anxious brother, endeavoring to be of service to you in the absence of Mr. Carlyle.
It is what I have suffered you to be, not else should I have accepted your incessant companionship. This is how you repay it.
I have acknowledged my fault and I can do no more. I will not so offend again, but there are moments when our dearest feelings break through the rules of life and betray themselves.
Indeed. You should have thought of that before.
Oh.
For all the haughty tone she had adopted with Captain Levison, the symptoms of sinful happiness which throbbed at her heart while he told her of his love spoke plainly to Lady Isabel of the expediency of withdrawing entirely from his society. She would summon her husband to take her away, to put the sea between them. As the shores of France receded from Isabel's view, a sensation of relief thrilled through her whole frame, and involuntarily she clasped her husband's hand.
You are not cold?
No. I'm very happy.
But you are surely shivering.
At the thought of what I should have done with myself, had you not allowed me to come back with you and left me there still, all alone, Archibald.
Isabel, do you remember in the first days of our marriage you told me that you did not love me, but that love would come? Can this be it?
Oh, never let me go away from you again. Keep me near you always.
Always. And always, Isabel. It is greater pain to me than to you to have you away from me.
Oh, darling.
Lady Isabel returned home to health, to the delight of meeting her children, to the glad sensation of security. But the form of Francis Levison was ever present with her, and at night it made the subject of her dreams. Oh, those dreams. Poor Lady Isabel. Mr. Carlyle, true to his promise to Francis Levison, one morning rode over to Levison Park to speak to Sir Peter.
It is good of you to go to such lengths on my nephew's behalf, Mr. Carlyle. I would pay his debts today and set him upon his legs again, but that I know I should have to do the same thing over and over again to the end of the chapter, as I have done before. Oh, he's a worthless fellow and nothing else.
His tale drew forth my compassion, and I promised I would see you and speak for him, Sir Peter. Of Captain Leveson's personal virtues and vices, I know nothing.
And the less you know of them, the better. I suppose he wants me to clear him and start afresh.
Something of the sort, I suppose.
But how is it to be done? I am at home and he is over there. Oh, his affairs are in a state of confusion, and no one can come to the bottom of them without an explanation from him. He must come over if he wants anything done.
Where is he to come to? He must be in England, sub rosa.
He can't be here. Lady Leveson would not have him for a day.
He might be at East Lynn. No one would dream of looking for him there. I think it is a pity you should not meet if you do feel inclined to help him.
You are a deal more considerate to him than he deserves, Mr. Carlyle. But if you think you can keep him safely tucked away at East Lynn, then let him be sent for, by all means.
Archibald, I do not wish Francis Leveson to stay at East Lynn.
It will only be for a few days, perhaps only a day or two. Sir Peter is in the humour to discharge his claims. The moment his resolve is known, the ex-captain may walk Her Majesty's dominions an unmolested man, free to go where he will.
That may be, but why should he come to our house?
I proposed it myself. I had no idea you would dislike his coming. Why should you?
I don't like him. That is, I don't care to have him at East Lynn.
My dear, I fear there's no help for it now. He's most likely on his road. He'll arrive tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Is he coming tomorrow?
As it is Sunday, a free day, he will be sure to take advantage of it. And what's it done that you should object to his coming? What? Did you say in the drawing that you disliked him?
He has done nothing. Why did she not confide herself to him as trustingly as a little child? Simply because her courage failed her. Oh, how many a time in after years did Lady Isabel recall that midnight drive with her husband and wish in vain repentance that she had opened his eyes to that dangerous man.
What fine children they are.
Thank you.
Beautiful faces.
They resemble their mother very much, I think. She was a very lovely child.
Did you know Lady Isabel as a child?
Well, I frequently saw her. She used to stay here with Lord Mountseven.
Of course. I was forgetting it was his property then.
Yes.
Come here, young lady.
Hello?
I must take possession of you. What is your name?
Isabel.
You are as beautiful as your mother. Why did you run away from me when I first arrived?
I ran away to tell Mama you were here. She was with Joyce.
Joyce? Who is Joyce?
Lady Isabel's maid. She had a bad accident this morning and slipped while she was out with the children. Her leg's broken.
Joyce, is that her Christian name or her surname?
It's her Christian name. Her name is Joyce Hallijohn. She's been with us for several years.
Hallijohn?
Hmm.
And it is a serious accident, you say. It will confine her to her bed for some time, I presume.
For weeks, the doctor says. No possibility of her getting up from it.
Excuse me, my lady, but Miss Hare is here, asking after Joyce.
Thank you, Peter. Ask them to come and join us here on the terrace.
Very well, my lady.
The Hares are old family friends, Captain Leveson. Hare is justice of the peace, sir.
I don't think I can walk another step. Take my arm.
Only a little way to go, Mama.
She's a deuced lovely girl at any event.
Dear Archibald, you must forgive me. I came over to inquire about poor Joyce, but the journey has so exhausted me. I'd like to prove an invalid myself.
Now, please sit down, Mrs. Hare.
Thank you.
Captain Leveson, Mrs. Hare, and Miss Hare.
How do you do,
ma'am?
You must stay the evening while you are here.
Yes.
It will afford you a rest, and tea will refresh you.
Oh, thank you, but we have already taken tea.
Oh, that is no reason why you should not take some more. Indeed, you seem too fatigued to be anything but a prisoner for the next hour or two.
Archibald,
mm-hmm. I must speak to you alone. Could we walk together for a little while?
Mm-hmm.
By all means. I'm sure no one will miss us.
Forgive me for taking you away in this unceremonious manner.
How very ill your mother looks. I thought that of late she'd begun to recover.
The walk over here has tired her. But it isn't simply that. She had a dream last night that has distressed her very much.
Oh.
Dreams always have a bad effect upon her. I'm no believer in dreams, but Mother's dreams bear upon the case in a curious manner.
What was it?
She dreamt that the real murderer was at West Lynn. She thought he was at our house, as a visitor, she said, or one making a morning call, and that she and I were conversing with him about the murderer. He wanted to deny it, to put it upon Richard, and he turned and whispered to Otway Bethel, who stood behind his chair. It is strange the way that Bethel invariably appears in her dreams.
It is certainly rather odd, but it is only a dream.
But what is odder is what happened to me this morning. I was walking in the garden, brooding on the dream and on the murderer being at West Lynn, when who should come to the gate but Tom Herbert. His brother, Major Herbert, was also there, and with them, Otway Bethel and Captain Thorne.
Thorne has returned to West Lynn?
I spoke with him. Do you wonder that I know not whether I'm awake or dreaming? They have some weeks' holiday and are here to spend it.
It is a singular coincidence.
Had anything been wanting to convince me that Thorne is the guilty man, this would have done it. Mama's dream, with the steadfast impression it left upon her that Hallijohn's murderer was now at West Lynn.
I say, Carlyle.
Who's that?
It's Captain Leveson.
I'll join you presently, Captain.
Do you like that, Captain Leveson?
He's a strange character. I fear he does not improve upon closer acquaintance.
To me, it looks as if he had placed himself in our way to hear what we were saying.
Eh? No. No, Barbara. What interest could it bear for him?
You are alone, Lady Isabel?
Mrs. Hare has gone off to talk to Joyce. The others are wandering in the garden, I think.
I saw them just now. Who is that Miss Hare?
They are old friends of Archibald's.
She's a remarkably pretty girl. She and your husband appear to have a pretty good understanding together. They seem to be deep in secret conversation.
What do you imply by that?
I mean no offense to you. It struck me simply that they were very involved in one another. But I'm sure I'm mistaken, Lady Isabel.
That was part three of East Lynn by Mrs. Henry Wood, adapted for radio in seven parts by Michael Bakewell. With Rosemary Leach as Mrs. Henry Wood, Moya Leslie as the Lady Isabel, David Collins as Mr. Carlyle, Anthony Edridge as Francis Leveson, Maxine Audley as Miss Cornelia, and Julie Barry as Barbara Hare. Mrs. Hare was played by Joan Matheson, Peter by Brian Hewlett, Wainwright by Paul Gregory, Joyce by Joe Campbell, and Wilson by Betty Huntley Wright. The Reverend Little was played by David Garth, Little Isabel by Bernadette Windsor, and Little William Carlyle by Ben Roll. The pianist was Martin Goldstein. East Lynn was directed by David Johnston.